You're listening to Dead Chai Paranormal Podcast. I'm Kelly.
And I'm John.
And we are so excited tonight to be talking to two of the founders of DamnedConnecticut.com. So Ray and Steve, how are you guys?
Hey, how's it going?
Good, how you doing?
Good.
So we're very excited to interview you because, you know, we all know your website really well. We're from Connecticut. That's where this podcast is based out of. So, I mean, your website has been a resource for so many, like, where should we hunt? You know, where should we get interviews? Blah, blah, blah.
So we start off by asking most of the people we're interviewing, how'd you get started? What got you interested in paranormal
fields? Well, this was, it was Ray's child, really, or baby. Me and Kate.
Demon.
Yeah. me and Kate were over his house for dinner, and he just kind of sprang it on me. Obviously, it's something he's been thinking about prior to that. So
when did this happen?
6-7 years ago.
Very nice. Yeah, like 2009, I think, is when we started. It's a little bit of a blur, but yeah, we had talked about we wanted to do a project kind of together, and I'm like, hey, I was thinking that I really love this stuff, and I know you guys do too, and let's give it a shot. And there's, you know, you're going to start something like that together. It's a website about that stuff. It's just a matter of your research, and websites are so easy. You know, Kate is a website designer, so getting that all taken care of was, mm-hmm. you know, I write, she does that, and Steve is our spiritual guide guidance. So.
I'm usually the one who wants to go over the top and add everything, and Ray kind of keeps it keeps it factual.
How were you guys all friends in the first place?
Ray?
Kate and I worked together, and then Kate married Steve, and that's how I got to meet Steve, and now we're all besties.
Yep. Oh, boy. Wait, Dan, edit that out of here. No BFF or besties on this show.
No?
I like it.
Come on. That was said with much sarcasm, right? Yeah. We're all really very good friends. We all get along. We torture the hell. I wish you could see half the emails, texts, and everything else we do. There's almost no bounds. I will say, for example, somehow I've been signed up for truck driving school. I've had clown college, I think, at one point I got signed up for.
Yeah.
Before my divorce was even final, I got signed up for ChristianMingle.com.
That was the day you told me you were getting divorced, actually.
Yeah, the day.
I signed you up.
Borderline thing, but yeah, that was great. Awesome.
I've sold a friend's car on Craigslist.
Oh, yeah. that's a good idea.
Uh-oh.
Oh, we should. If we had time, if we had time, we could tell you the Alamo story and how Steve and I both got in trouble with that one.
Yeah, my wife was in. She's not big on pop, current pop culture or anything like that, and she was in San Antonio and on a business trip. And I told her you should ask about the cool bike in the basement. There's an antique bike, and she had never seen Pee-wee Herman's Big Adventure. So yeah. She was asking everyone at the Alamo about the bike.
Right. I had told her too. I had called up and I'd been like, just randomly like, oh, if you're going to San Antonio, make sure to see the bike in the basement. And she's like, yeah, Steve told me it'll be great.
The poor Kate.
And then I was following her on Facebook that day. And like, she's like, oh, get ready to go in the Alamo. And I waited about like 20 minutes and I just texted her. I'm like, have you seen the bike yet? And I just got back a text in all caps that's profanity that I can't repeat. So I'm like, oh, okay.
So why the field of paranormal? I mean, were you investigating as a kid or when you were younger and you said, you know what, I know a bunch of places that I'm just going to put out there and you know, kind of talk about or?
Well, for me, it's a subject I've always been kind of interested in. I've loved like the paranormal my whole life from when I was mm-hmm. a kid. Growing up in the 70s, I used to watch Leonard Nimoy's In Search Of. My dad used to make us watch Kolchak the Night Stalker, and was early on board with the X-Files and a bunch of other things. My mother, when we were kids, used to, on vacation, take us to cemeteries. So this was kind of all up my alley.
Yeah, and I'm similar. It was more just something I've always done on my own time, just research, reading as much as I can on the different local and world stories, actually, all over the world, things that have happened. And then just being able to kind of drill down to Connecticut seemed like a really fun idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Go on.
I was going to say, one of my daytime gig is at Connecticut Magazine. So, like, over the last couple of years before we started this, I really got a good exposure to the state and all the stories, and I got to go all over. And as I was going all over, I kept finding out about all these cool places, and people started telling me. So when we decided to start the site, I already had, like, a good, list in my head of places we're going to write about right from the start. So,
yeah, and we all know that Connecticut is almost – unanimously agreed on as, like, the most haunted state in the U.S.
Yeah, it's up there. I think it's one of those things where I think because our recorded history goes back so far in the state, I mean, obviously the place has been settled for thousands of years, but, you know, European colonists have been here since the 1600s, even the late 1500s, some first traders came in. But because it's been settled so long, you have opportunity for all sorts of legends and stories to happen. Obviously, there's been a lot of deaths. There's old houses, all the elements that you would want for, you know, classic haunting. It's all been here for probably longer than anywhere else in the nation, except for maybe Massachusetts.
But. Yeah, that's like the only other one. But you still, I don't know, it's like I still hear so many more things in Connecticut.
Yeah, everywhere you go.
So did either of you ever have your own personal paranormal experiences that helped influence this idea?
You know, it's interesting because I was online today, and there's a documentary out. I think it's called The Nightmare or The Nightmares, and it's about people with sleep paralysis and shadow people, that story. And the only thing that really ever happened to me was I was laying in bed, and I heard three knocks on the wall behind me. I opened my eyes. I saw something come out of the wall and leave through another wall.
Wow.
And, you know, at the time I got up, I ran downstairs. I didn't go back to sleep for like 2 hours. And, you know, afterwards I started thinking, well, maybe I was asleep. All I can say is I've never had a dream or anything like that where I was that scared where on waking, I didn't just say, oh, bad dream. You know, I actually got up out of bed, left, and knew what I had seen. And so that's my story. Also, my house growing up, there were always, I remember being a little kid and my parents discussing something they had heard. A child had died that lived in the house. He didn't die in the house, but he did live there. And my mother repeats a story where she heard me playing in my room, toys were moving around, something crashed. She heard me giggling and she started yelling to me, and then she realized I wasn't home. I was at the neighbor's house playing with a friend. And so it was a lot of stories like that about my house growing up. And a lot of people have gone there, so they got a weird, just a vibe from it. But nothing sinister, nothing bad ever happened for me.
Where did you grow up, Steve?
North Haven.
North Haven. Okay. Yep. Ray, go ahead.
I was going to say, Steve also, one of the things I always give Steve credit, and he always says it, is that everyone has a ghost story. You know,
everybody does.
If it's not your own personal story, it's a friend, it's a neighbor, it's an aunt, uncle, grandparent.
Yeah. Agreed.
Which has always kind of always fascinated me. I don't have a personal, any experience. And, I've been to, and I was saying before that, I've been to, like, overnight investigations. I've been to, graveyards and all sorts of creepy and unusual places, but I've never had like, oh, that's a ghost, or that's something. You know what I mean? Like, I guess I'm not sensitive to that necessarily, or I just don't have that experience. But I know enough other people, obviously now, and enough other stories I've heard that kind of keep you engaged in all that. So keep me engaged.
Yeah, so. You know, I like about Damned Connecticut is our like favorite thing is ghosts, but yours isn't just a ghost website. I mean, that's one out of all types of phenomenon. You guys have legends on there. You have a sea monster section or a cryptozoology.
Yeah, I really liked, I've always adhered to what they call 14 phenomena, from Charles Fort, who wrote the Book of the Damned. That's kind of where Damned Connecticut came from. He wrote a book probably about 100 years ago, 110 years ago, called The Book of the Damned. And basically it was all about unusual phenomena that, you know, science tried to explain away. And his dictum was always that, you know, one measures a circle beginning anywhere. And he kind of always compiled all this data about fish falls, about, you know, bizarre weather, about all these different things. And he always kind of tried to keep an open mind rather than explain it away or accept it. He just said, all right, these are things that people are reporting are happening. And that's kind of like, I tried to take that tack, you know, when we were talking about what things to write about, you know, ghosts are great, but there's so many other things too to write about curiosities, about weird things, about, like you said, legends. There's so many good stories. You know, I barely scratched the surface with some of the legends on the site. You know, I mean, we've added everything from like the Winstead Wild Man to the Headless Horseman of Canton. You know, I've got more. I apologize to anyone out there that maybe has gotten through our whole site that we haven't added a lot lately. But I'm working, and I was saying before that I'm working on a new book right now called Stones and Bones of New England, which is kind of, it's a revision of the original one. So it's all about cemeteries. So I have like even more stories that once I'm done with this book by October, when we get through the Halloween season, I'm going to be adding a lot more new content to the website and hopefully getting some more interviews and other things going there.
Awesome. Back in action.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. And I'm similar in that, you know, my favorite thing on the site for me anyhow is finding new stories, new, even new history. One of my favorite locations and one of the first things we went out on was the Little Genesee settlement in, was it Guilford, right? And it's just,
no, or Middlebury. Little Genesee. You're right.
It's on Connecticut Water Trust or Company. Everything we go to that we're not supposed to or anything like that, or we want to go to, it's always on the water property. So we have a kind of a theory on them controlling everything. But, but yeah, that was
water company people control the world.
Yeah. So we have to add a conspiracy section to your website.
We just got to figure out what they're doing exactly.
Right. Yeah.
How many sites did you guys start out with when you first started the website? Obviously, you've added, but when you first started, you must have had some experience going out. Did you have like 10, 12, 20?
How many stories?
Like stories for the sites to research.
Yeah, I think when it first, like the within the first month, there were probably 5 or 6. I think when Ray published, or when we published the site, Ray had written ahead 4 or 5 at least entries.
Probably like maybe closer to even a dozen, because there were like a couple obvious ones. Some of them I went back and added too, but I think like when we originally started, we had like a good dozen to, you know, like all the hits. You know, we had like Dudley Town in there, and
yeah,
you know, places like Gungi Womp and there's a couple other ones I'm just blanking on right now, but you know, I think we tried to have every category filled when we started.
Okay.
So we may have had 1 or 2 stories in each, and then we've just obviously expanded.
Okay. And can you tell everyone how your site is set up? Cause I was saying, you know, you guys actually take pride, you know, we were talking before, you don't just throw this together. You're really thought out. It's really organized and categorized, and you know, each story is set up a certain way. Do you want to talk about that a little?
Yeah, sure. Basically, you know, we have, each story has 3 parts. It's like, here's the story, or like we call it the damn story. You know, have we gone, you know, the 3 of us, or what's our personal experience? And then if you go, you know, which usually with the address, or as mentioning earlier about, you know, there's no trespassing, or if there is trespassing, or if it's public land or anything like that. So we try to keep it organized like that. We have different categories. You know, there's hauntings, there's some UFO stuff, there's legends. Sometimes things kind of cross, you know, cross over both. Sometimes you have hauntings that are legends. And we try to, you know, give it, you know, make it as reader friendly as possible.
Yeah.
So what's your process then from beginning to end, basically, when you decide you're going to write about somewhere? You know, sometimes you do interviews, sometimes you don't. How does this all roll out?
A lot of it, I think, is just opportunity. When something, for as far as interviews, that's usually an author or a TV show is coming out, a movie. Mm-hmm. So when that presents itself, I tell Ray, you know, exactly what I want done, how I want it done, when I want it done by, and then I let him take.
Oh my gosh! Can you see Ray right now?
Yeah, I
guess. He's falling over.
That's awesome. He's turning red as his shirt.
I do it in such a way that he actually thinks, you know, it was all his idea.
Yeah.
Ray, you were right. That's exactly what he was going to say.
That is a clever skill to have. That is a good one. Make it so it's their idea.
Yeah, it's a lot of the stuff, like you said, as we come across, we do, as we do see things, we do pass it along to each other. We're always, you know, Steve's a big history fan. He's always looking around for stories around the state. So as he finds stuff, he kind of filters it over to me and I write about things. Some of it is opportunity. We have people now that reach out to us all the time, and of course we don't respond as much as we can. But like, you know, if you look at the last couple of interviews that we have done, they all reached out. No, I reached out. I had gotten Cindy Wolf Boynton's book on the witchcraft trials. I had gotten that at Connecticut Magazine, and we did a little something in the magazine. But I'm like, oh, I can talk to her at length, you know. So that's how that one came about. Bill Hall, who did the interview in the book about Lindley Street haunting in the 1970s, the poltergeist event there.
Mm-hmm. Bridgeport?
Yeah, that was in Bridgeport. Yep. He had reached out to us and we interviewed him, and that's great. And he's got another book coming out in a couple of months that we're going to talk to him about when that one comes out. He's done some really good research on those two. The Lindley book street and the interview, if you go find it on the website, are terrific because he presents a lot of the information, like a lot of the original police files and interview transcripts and that stuff that, you know, if you're a real researcher and you like history, like you're getting the actual raw information, not just, you know, someone's filtered or regurgitated version of it, which is great. I kind of, you know, I think one of the problems and Kelly and I were talking about this earlier about how, unfortunately, a lot of the stuff you see on a lot of websites, it's the same story cut and pasted. And, you know, it's from someone's book, like either like a, you know, weird one that someone took that just copied and pasted on their site and act like it's theirs. Or there are other, you know, or even Connecticut Curiosities, I've seen the stories from there kind of cut and paste another. And even my own stuff cut and pasted on someone else's website, and so few people do the original research anymore. It's like, oh, I'm just gonna, you know, build a site and just copy and paste everybody else's work, and it's not really cool. I really try, and I think Steve does too, and Kate, we try to give credit where credit is due. If we found the story here, we try to link back to you, or, you know, this is where you can read more over here, and sometimes we'll do summaries of stuff or we'll talk about things, but you know, we try to give credit where credit's due and, you know, present our part of the story too. So
do you guys have a favorite location? I'm going to dive right in. I've been waiting to ask you.
Sorry. A favorite spot like to go visit?
Correct.
That we, you know, Steve, why don't you take a second? I'm sorry.
I think for me, it's just one of the cooler ones for me was the Center Street. Is it Center Street Church? The church on the green in New Haven.
Center Church,
yeah. That one was really interesting. It's, I don't know if you've seen it. It has the gravestones in the church in the basement.
Oh, my God.
With the wolf tables.
Oh, my gosh.
And the whole story of the New Haven Green with the bodies that are buried under it with the – I think they just recently, and we covered it, a tree fell down and –
Right, after one of the hurricanes 2 years ago, when the trees got uprooted and there was skeletons in the roots.
Yeah, so that whole area, that whole green is a large graveyard.
Yeah, a lot of people, the center of New Haven was, you know, they're literally, when you go to the green, if you go see a concert, you're standing in a graveyard. They've just, you know, like poltergeist, they move the headstones over to Grove Street Cemetery. They're stacked up against the wall, and there are hundreds of bodies, about thousands of bodies into the green of New Haven. That's where they were all buried. So when they went, to build Center Church, they built the church up over the cemetery. So the original tombstones are there, like Benedict Arnold's first wife, Benedict Arnold from New Haven, actually from Norwich, and then moved to New Haven. His first wife is buried there, amongst other people. You can see her tombstone. that's a really cool place.
Yeah, and they do ghost tours there too.
Yeah,
I actually went on it. Somebody got it for me as a present. And we went, I think it was like an hour and a half or 2 hours long, and they walk you all along that area. The green, they told that story with the tree. And
Right.
I think it's that library too, the one that you said. It must be. There's a story down there of a girl that haunts the basement, and this story kind of gets a little kooky, but you know, it's like there's a student studying and he sees this pretty redhead going hee hee hee, kind of giggling and, you know, beckoning him over, and he runs to go find her, but there's nobody there, and it happens like five times, and like the fifth time he sees the ghost of a dead body. So some's a little crazy, but yeah, some of it's just like legit true, and it's really interesting history.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, even just the history alone is just as creepy for me, you know, as some of the stories, just knowing all that is there and you're sitting on it when you're on the green.
Yeah.
Wow.
Another place I really like too, we're talking about, I love just visually Seaside Sanatorium, which is
we just went down there. I absolutely love that place.
In Waterford, you know, Connecticut has this, has a preponderance of abandoned mental hospitals. There's at least five of them, you know, that they're empty now. And, you know, they're super creepy looking, you know, and they have these kind of dark histories. But Seaside Sanatorium is awesome. And the story behind it, it was originally built, it was designed by a fairly well-renowned architect, Cass Gilbert. Originally, it was set up, and we have this story on our website. You might have to dig for it a little, but it was originally made for children with tuberculosis. And the thought was to cure tuberculosis. The kids needed to be outside by the sea.
Yep.
And there's pictures, and I found them going through an old magazine, of these kids at Seaside, because, you know, when it was, you know, the children's hospital, out in the snow in their underwear playing and building snow forts.
Oh, wow.
Like just literally with mittens, their underwear on, because they felt the cold air helped their tuberculosis. And then eventually they found, well, medicine works too. And so they didn't have to freeze the kids.
We went down there, what was it, about 2 months ago, Dan? And they still have like a slide and, you know, a swing set and everything in the
back. That was great.
We did a little EVP session there, but didn't get anything.
No go.
Yeah, that was a no go.
Yeah, it's super creepy looking. I mean, it's a gorgeous looking building. I know it's state-owned property. You can't go in. You're not supposed to go in the buildings again. But the property you can go on because it's open by the state. Parking can be a little tricky. You can park over at Harkness, which is about – it's actually right down the beach. If you can walk along the beach, you can park at Harkness State Park and walk over there. I don't know where – there is a small lot near the property.
Yeah,
we
parked there, but people were getting out to go to the beach. I think it's a private area. But we pulled in behind somebody and parked right away and started walking like we're going to the beach, and nobody bothered us.
Right. So. But the property, no matter where you park, the property is open. Like I said, you could park at Harkness. It's probably like a half mile away if you want to walk a little. But you can, people take their dogs on there. And actually, there's a plan now to, they want to try and preserve some of the buildings and keep the property open to everyone to use, like have like a walking trail. It's a gorgeous piece of seaside property, seaside sanctuary, right? It's, you know, they picked it for a reason. But, you know, when it was then being a children's hospital, it became a mental hospital and then, you know, kind of downhill from there.
Did you ever go in there, Ray, or no?
We went up to the building. You can kind of get in the doors, but I try to follow the same rules that we tell other people. Like, you run up to the doors, we put our cameras through the windows that were broken, but we didn't actually go in.
Yeah, 10 years ago, I would have went in probably, but...
Yeah. That's what I say. So many people are like, oh, you and your little group, you should go to this place. And I'm like, no, I'm in my 30s. Like, I really can't be getting arrested for that stuff now.
We're actually guilty of that, but it was in Massachusetts. And I had stopped at the police station to ask for permission. Dan and I had gone up there. And they said, we're not going to tell you yes. We know you can't go in there. You could be arrested for trespassing. But I can tell you that we're not going in there.
All right.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
That was in Belchertown. I don't know if you've ever heard of that one. The state
school?
Ray, if you ever get a chance, check out the YouTube video. It's a documentary. It's pretty scary, actually. Watch it with the light on.
What was the name again?
It's the Belchertown State School.
Okay.
Yeah, it's always these like abandoned state schools, right?
Or, oh, you know, it's crazy. And that that documentary, the kids were tortured, and it breaks your heart if you're a father to see that stuff happen. But it's a spooky place. We actually got a great EVP out of there when we went.
Cool.
That's cool.
One of the first podcasts we did together, actually, we did our EVP session. They had to say that was the EVP because it's something so clear. I thought, you know, it was one of them. I'm like, where's the EVP? No, loud yelling was the EVP.
Well, we had taken, not to get off track, but we had taken it to Gary Galka. You guys know who he is?
No. That name sounds familiar, it's not clear.
He was on Ghost Adventures. They did an investigation at his house.
Connecticut resident?
Yeah, a Connecticut resident in Granby. He owns a distributor company that he makes the, like, SB7. He made the Melmeter after his daughter, Melissa, that had passed away.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we took it to him, and he said it's one of the clearest, best EVPs he's ever heard. So that was, you know,
stand up. Is that on?
Troy, I love that.
Puff my chest out a little bit. you know what? I don't know if it is. Maybe we can get it up there, Dan, just so people can hear it.
Yeah, gotcha. So it's episode 1 of our podcasting. Okay. We might as well throw it on this one too, though.
Yeah, it was pretty good.
Right here.
Take one more time.
Moldy wood.
So out of all the different types of creepy things out there, you know, Bigfoots and aliens and sea monsters and ghosts, what are some of the types of phenomenon that you each do believe in, and what are some that you guys are like, no, that probably just doesn't exist?
Ghosts, I definitely check a yes in that one. I just think, I don't know what, you know, I'm not going to say it's definitely a spirit of someone, but there's something that is definitely out there, I guess is the word, but ghosts, and to a degree, I don't want to say I definitely agree with UFO phenomena, but I think with the amount of unknown in the universe, I think there's a very good chance that some of those stories are legitimate. But for me personally, again, I am someone that, you know, I want to see it with my own eyes, and it's, that's at that point I'll be, I guess you could say, a true believer. Maybe I'm a little agnostic on it, but I do think there's a lot to be that we don't know, put it that way.
All right, so aliens, if you want Steve to be a believer, here's your next probe.
Steve, yep. Give him your address.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. If
I, no. He said, no, it. See it, not feel it. Yeah. And what are some things, or if there's more that you do believe in, come on.
I think at the end of the day, there's a lot that can be, I think if we ever figure out what's going on, a lot of it is going to be wrapped up together. I don't believe... Well, I'll say this. I don't believe in Bigfoot in Connecticut, because we do have a story on that, right, Ray? Yeah, I'm not a big Bigfoot guy. I just think over time we would have had more proof.
Yeah. And any check proof. That box as well.
Any proof.
So what is our special very own Connecticut Bigfoot? That's the Winstead?
Well,
Go
ahead, Ray.
Yeah, the Winstead Wild Man. That's a story from the 1800s. Of someone, you know, the guy was out picking berries with his dog, and all of a sudden this giant, naked, hairy man jumped out of the woods and scared the crap out of his dog, apparently.
So some Italian guy came out of the woods.
Ray's Italian.
Oh, sorry, Ray. So is my boyfriend, and I'm sorry for me.
That's okay. So, I always bust.
Yeah, there's also, there's been other sightings, too. There was an episode of... Finding Bigfoot here, probably about 3 years ago, they brought, you know, Bobo and the whole crew came out here to track down a Bigfoot sighting in Connecticut. It seems rather unlikely to me. I'll just go with that this is not, you know, the Pacific Northwest, which is huge, or the Himalayas, maybe you could get away with something like that, because those areas are vast, but just not big enough to I can't believe it.
And the interesting thing is there's still, if you go to the, I do like going to their, the website. There's a sighting website for Bigfoot and there's always hits on Connecticut, which is interesting.
Oh, there absolutely are. Yeah.
One oh, sitting in class the, at Northwest yeah. Community College.
Yeah. There was one, there's actually one of my favorites. There was a sighting right in the, like it's probably in the 1950s, I want to say, in Shelton, where I, you know, I live in Shelton, and it was down by the railroad tracks. Apparently these kids were picking berries and they claim that Bigfoot kind of just wandered along the river, kind of nodded at them and kept going, kind of thing.
How's it going?
Well, there's two validations then, Bigfoot and berries.
Yeah, yeah.
So if he's not at the college, he might be at a farmer's market or a grocery store.
Yeah, well, you know, Bigfoot's got to eat too.
How about you, Ray? What are some of the things you do believe in and the things that you're like, no way?
I try to keep an open mind about everything. I don't necessarily commit or deny anything. I admit that there's a lot more in this universe, like Steve was saying, that I just don't understand. And I guess I always think people talk about, you know, magic being science that just hasn't been figured out yet. You know, so I am, you know, I can't, you know, I obviously I'm laughing at Bigfoot. when it comes to UFOs, I absolutely believe there is life elsewhere in the universe. I just don't know that they're consciously coming here. I just always kind of laugh at the notion that if you're going to come across the galaxy, you're going to stop and just probe random members of a species for or what reason? Like, what are you accomplishing with that? Like, I'm not sure, you know.
One at a time, too.
I'm trying to think, like, how, like, even the aliens are justifying it. Like, oh, yeah, we laid out all this money to go across the galaxy, and we're just going to probe, you know, these one particular species on this whole planet with millions of species. We're just probing one group.
I'm sure they won't tell.
We're only picking random ones there. I always like to say that. I always laughed at how you know, aliens never tend to probe people like professional videographers who would have a camera set up to record this whole thing. Professional photographers. It's always, you know, it's always the worst photographers that aliens and UFOs appear to. It's never any pros. It's just a horrible coincidence, I'm sure.
So there's like bureaucracy in the galaxy everywhere, then red tape, one at a time. No, no, let us get a whole bunch. Nope, stay away from that condominium complex. New York City, nope. Go to that one.
Yeah, right. And maybe... Or maybe they had budget cuts. You know, they can't probe anyone. They've got to pick and choose here. You know, you know, we can't. You know, don't have the money to fund. You know, it's like our NASA, right? We can only fund so many launches or whatever. Now they can only fund so many probings, and then they run out of, you know, intergalactic monetary units, whatever those might be. I don't know.
Could be like we said, it's impossible. In the conversation.
You always end up probing. I don't know how that happens.
One I wanted to ask you about, there's like one thing that you guys write about. There's so many articles. Leatherman, what is the deal with that? You have so many different articles on that.
Ray, you can take this one because you've done a lot of...
No, I thought you were going to... I thought you, because your buddy Dan is like the Leatherman's bestie. Sorry, I didn't say bestie.
There we go again.
Right, Steve didn't do a good job of making Ray think it was his idea to answer.
Understand when I say it with complete sarcasm. Right. It's not like something I generally use other than in a derisive manner. The story of the old leather man. Yeah, it's a good story. There's actually other ones. There's the old darn man, kind of the same story. But the old leather man was a gentleman in the 1850s, 60s, around that era, who walked a continuous 34-day 360-mile circuit through Connecticut into New York. Basically, he went, if you want to, it's a circle, so I guess you measure it anywhere, right? I said that earlier. Basically, through like central Connecticut, down kind of along the river, back across like through New Haven, this area, to New York line, to the Hudson River, back up north, and then back around in Connecticut. He walked the same route every day, every month, dressed as you guess completely in leather from head to toe. There's an excellent book out there that Dan DeLuca wrote a few years ago about the leather man. It's got all the newspaper accounts, it's got pictures. Dan if you get a chance to see him talking, he does do talks from time to time. He actually has a pipe that belonged to the Leatherman, which is kind of cool.
Oh, okay.
But the Leatherman never spoke to anyone. He uttered occasionally a word. He would never sleep in anyone's house. He would take handouts. He had like little caves along the way that he stopped in. And he just kept walking the same circle. No one really knew his story or where he came. After he died, they found a French prayer book on him. So they kind of speculated that he might have been from French Canada and had come down here. But, you know, again, if no one ever tells you their story, any speculation is, you know, right and wrong at the same time.
Yeah, it's just that.
And there are some connections to my friend Don Johnson is actually his name. He was involved recently. Dan or the town, I think, right? They wanted to dig up.
It's Sparta Cemetery. Yeah, the when he died in Ossining, New York, which is Sing Sing prison. It's just north of Sleepy Hollow, and the Leatherman's original grave, which I've gone to see, and actually you can see it on the website too. His headstone was about, and I'm not exaggerating, literally 5 feet from Route 9, which is kind of a big road. Like, it's right in the front of the cemetery. So, like, cars would be zipping by at, like, 15, 60 miles an hour. So the people in the cemetery wanted to exhume the Leatherman's remains and move them to another part of the cemetery. So go ahead, Steve.
Yeah, and so there were two groups on that, and one including Dan DeLuca, right?
Yep.
He and others wanted to do it. They were for it. There were some question on whether they can get DNA to possibly see who he might have been related to. And the other group, who my friend was sort of championing, was I think it was Leave Leatherman Alone or Free the Leatherman. and they basically did. They wanted to just let him be. And as he put it, the Leatherman got the last laugh, because when they dug up, they did end up digging him up, and all they found was a couple of coffin nails at the location where his headstone was. They think the soil being so acidic there actually ate through everything.
Oh.
Wow.
No, he's either gone or he wasn't buried there, but they don't have anything to run any tests on. So.
Yeah. So now there's another marker in the middle of the cemetery with a big stone dedicated to him. And if you go there, people leave a lot of things on the stone, like little different trinkets and stuff, which is kind of cool. So, you know, if you go to Sparta, New York, it's the Sparta Cemetery. It's actually cool too, because there's a stone in there that was damaged by a cannonball that was shot by the HMS Vulture, which was the ship that picked up Benedict Arnold when he was fleeing after trying to turn over
West Point.
Thank you. So, I mean, if you like historic cemeteries, it's kind of a cool one to check out.
Cool.
And you can see the old Leatherman's stone. So.
Awesome. Well, now that you guys are a little warmed up memorizing some of the stuff on your site and all these stories, do you still agree, as you did earlier, to play a little game with us?
Yeah, sure. And you know, you can edit this part out, but I'll probably let Ray win this one, just because, you know, he has the books out and I want him to look good.
No, we're leaving that in there.
There. Yeah. Good.
Or you can just be a team. You can be each other's lifeline.
No, don't leave that in. Do not edit that out. Hear that little bit of sarcasm.
So we almost skipped it because we were racking our brains trying to think of a title, and we came up with Name That Ghost.
Okay.
So yeah, we weren't racking our brains. It was really simple. So so basically, we took a few stories off your site, and we've written some clues about the story and even used some of your, not your writing style, but kind of some of your words in there. So
we copy and paste it.
So what we're going to do, we'll give you three clues. We'll give you all three. And you will guess that ghost or legend and tell us where that takes place, okay?
Sure, why not? I think Steve should answer them all, but go ahead. Let's hear it.
Hopefully they're not too hard. All right, want me to go first?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, so Clue one, don't bother looking for this ghost on a foggy day. Two, with all the ectoplasmic blobs, they should have just filmed Ghostbusters here. And three, if you go with Ray, maybe you could play a game of Duck, Duck, Goose.
Okay, is it
name
the...
ghost.
So
it's a ghost that would be hard to find on a foggy day.
I'm going to say the White Lady.
Ding, ding, ding. Yes. White Lady. And where is she at?
That was the... Was it the Union Cemetery or...
Yeah, no, Union. Yeah. Yep, Union and...
Yeah, there was two of them, yeah.
Yeah, the Stephanie in Monroe. Good. Yeah.
Can I just interject for a moment? This is one of our favorite mysteries in this whole, like, little mention. One of the first places we ever went was Union Cemetery, and it was a real snowy day. And it had been like a snowy season, and we were just wandering around the cemetery, and there was this one set of footprints that weren't ours that we kind of saw in the cemetery too. And we're like, what are these? And while we're following these footprints in the cemetery, one of the footprints had corn in it.
Yeah.
Like kernels of corn.
A few of them, yeah.
A few of them. And we're just like, what the hell is this? It was just the most random thing we'd ever seen. We're like, why would you have corn in random footprints in a cemetery? Like, it just made, it was just bizarre.
That is. And it said on your website, you found one thing, right? A goose?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't remember that.
There was like a story on your website how you heard a noise and kind of freaked you out, and then like a giant goose jumped out over a gravestone.
Right. Yep.
Yes, I remember that. Yep. Yeah, that was me. That's right. That's when I had gone there the first time with my friend. That's actually before the time I went with Steve and Kate. It's when I went with my friend Bob once, and we were there, and we were taking photos, and all of a sudden we heard this noise, and we kind of got startled, and it's like, oh, God, just a goose. We're dumbasses.
How many color ladies are there? It seems like every state has, you know, a few stories of, like, a blue lady, a white lady, a green
pink lady.
Yeah, and always a story. How many do you know of in Connecticut?
I only know the white, I think.
I know. There's a white lady. There's the blue lady.
Yeah.
There's a green lady. Right? Green lady is a Seventh-day Adventist cemetery.
Yeah.
The white lady. There's a blue... Is it a blue lady that's...
There is a blue lady. I forget where...
I forget where it is, too. I think there's another white lady, too.
The green lady.
Maybe.
Yep.
Green lady. Yeah,
green
I was saying
lady,
that
one's in Burlington.
What's the story behind her? Yep. Who was she supposed to have been? Do you remember?
The green lady?
The green lady.
I don't remember the story there. I'm sorry. I just... They kind of run together sometimes.
Yeah.
And I don't...
That's why. That's
I can't
okay.
keep going. I can't keep all my ghosts straight.
Okay. Oh, well, hopefully three more because we got three more for you.
All right, here we go.
Okay.
Who's up? Ray?
Ray.
Yeah, just whoever gets it.
All right.
Oh, okay.
Whoever gets it.
This person was supposedly killed with the same tool as Lizzie Borden's family. The word spirit has two meanings to this location. Even fires can't keep this place closed.
Oh. It's one of the restaurants.
Yeah, it's one of the restaurants.
No hints.
Is it Abigail's? Pettibone Tavern? Am I in the wrong spot?
Oh.
No, it is Abigail's. I'm sorry.
We're like, damn.
I didn't think you guys were going to get any wrong, but I wanted to do that anyway. We're dying to use that sound effect.
It's been 6 years.
That's why it'd be hard. Like, some of these stories are older. So Abigail's, that place has been a few different things, and it's burned down twice.
Right.
Right. Okay.
And
well, I'm impressed that I got it. I was like, yeah, sorry.
Do you know the story behind that one? Like, why she said to haunt it or anything?
I thought, wasn't she, like, I want to say it was from, I want to say she was, like, scorned, like a woman scorned for some reason or tried to kill her. Her seafaring husband had gone out and she thought he was cheating and then he died or she murdered him or something along those lines. And I know there's supposed to be a painting of her, right, and on the property and... that there's a smudge or marks on that they can't get off or something like that. That's vaguely what I'm recalling, that there's something involving her painting on the property, and it's in Simsbury or Avon, right?
I believe it's Simsbury.
Yeah.
I had heard they're flooded with calls after ghost hunters visited that location, and they don't let anybody in there anymore.
Yeah, I had a coworker, when she found out I was in a ghost hunting group, she's like, oh, I have a friend that has a restaurant, and I used to work there. Maybe I could get you in. And she's like, oh, no, it's been flooded. I'm like, it's Abigail's, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Third one.
We're two for two. This is great. We're very bad at 500 at worst case scenario.
So, one, she was the kind of wife who could make a guy want to jump off a cliff. Hope you're willing to work late because she won't let you bury her till after sundown. And three, her ghost is said to desecrate her own grave by sending cars crashing into her headstone.
Oh, Midnight Mary?
Nope. I know this one. This was just in my...
I had to let him have one.
Thanks, Steve.
I literally was writing about this today because I was doing for the story for Connecticut Magazine. I'm including this one. It's Hannah Craner or Hannah Hovey, the Wicked Witch of Monroe.
Awesome. Yes. Good. So that was a really weird story that she was accused. There was nothing really big about her life when she was alive, but then her husband wandered off a cliff. This is from your story, so I'm citing it right now. This is from damnedconnecticut.com. So she like wandered off a cliff, and they said that, you know, she might have put him in some kind of daze to make him do that.
Right. Yeah. Some sort of, that was the story. Apparently she was a little bit of a unpleasant woman. She, you know, later on, I don't know how much I wrote on there, but because I just wrote this story in a lot more detail for the magazine, how she traded on her witchy reputation pretty well. She would try to get people to do things for her. Otherwise, she was going to curse them. You know, there's all sorts of, you know, stories where she made prognostications that came true. And,
oh, God.
You know, so they thought she was a witch. And it was well after. It was the... she was born when the American Revolution ended, so 1783. So she was living in that period, and she died when she was 80. And the story, as you started alluding to, was, you know, on her deathbed, she allegedly told everyone, you know, carry my coffin to the cemetery, bury me after sunset, otherwise some evil fate will, you know, befall you. And the story is, you know, after she died, and the, you know, there was much rejoicing apparently amongst the neighbors who had been terrorized by her. They tried to put her coffin on a sled, and allegedly it fell off the sled and started sliding back towards the house. They tried it again. They went a little further and things started shaking, and they jumped off and it fell off again. So they totally freaked out. They picked up the coffin. They carried it all the way to the graveyard where they buried it. And then when they went back, you know, to kind of check on her or clear out her belongings, the house was in flames. You know, one last kind of, you know, you burn witches, right? So it only makes sense that her house would burn down at the end of the story. Of course, history will, you know, if you actually think about it, I mean, they would not ever bury someone in the middle of winter with snow on the ground. They probably had to leave her until the spring thaw. That's why she's this elderly woman, lived by herself, you know, in the woods. She was a little eccentric, so I'm sure that's where all the witch stories started.
Of course.
And speaking of that, if anyone listening ever comes across we really want to get a photograph of a gravestone in a basement, because I know someone who moved, but when I was younger, they had an actual gravestone in their basement because it was a 1790 house, and they had buried in the winter. They were able to break the ground in the basement of the house, and they buried someone down there. So if anyone comes across that, I really want a photo.
Was this place in Cromwell?
What's that?
Was this place in Cromwell?
No, it was East North Haven, actually. Yeah, it was an old house. So it was really interesting.
Okay, it's just funny because actually I investigated one, and I don't remember the exact reasons why. Oh, no, yes, I do. They were built on like an old graveyard, didn't even know it. And there was some kind of flood, and the gravestones came up and they actually saved them.
Oh man.
Wow. So there's more than one house. That's a gravestone in the basement.
Oh, that's crazy.
Damn, Connecticut.
All right.
Last one.
Pressure's on.
Like Family Feud, like all or nothing.
This place is as pretty as a picture. Staying here is the highlight of a spirit's afterlife. If you are too afraid to run, maybe you can hop in a boat and get away.
The highlight of the spirit's afterlife.
Oh, go ahead. It's the lighthouse.
I was going to say the Ledge Lighthouse or the Penfield Reef Lighthouse. They're both kind of, there's haunted stories about both of them.
Yeah, the Ledge Lighthouse.
Yeah.
Ledge Lighthouse.
Very good.
I think I got three and Ray got one.
Thank you for joining us.
Awesome. So what's the story with the Ledge Light Ghost house? You got it.
There you go. Okay, showdown. Now, do we play for the boat?
Yeah, what are boat?
I did one more scent than Steve, whatever it is.
So, who's the ghost?
One more
the
dollar,
ledge
right? That's the strategy.
One more dollar, yeah, no sense.
The Ledge Lighthouse, it's the story of Ernie, the innkeeper, although the Ledge Lighthouse. There's two lighthouse stories. I just mentioned the Penfield Reef and the Ledge Lighthouse. Ledge Lighthouse, the story is supposedly that the innkeeper, his wife had hooked up with the local ferry captain. So he threw himself from the top of the lighthouse to the waters below and drowned. And now he haunts the property. The name is Ernie of the spirit there. And I know TAPS has been there. There's been other groups that have investigated and heard all sorts of eerie noises and unusual things. If you haven't seen the Ledge Lighthouse, it's kind of cool. It's like it's built on a platform in the middle of New London Harbor. It's three-story kind of square. It's not your traditional straight-up like barbershop pole lighthouse. It's like a square, three-story red building with a light on top of it.
On that key. Kate just mentioned to me that they're going to, and maybe they already do, but that they're going to be opening up, or they're thinking about opening up tours for the public. So that might be something.
I thought they were, I had heard they were doing
maybe
that.
Maybe they already did. Yeah, okay.
I think they do them pretty much through the summer. You can go out there. Yeah. There's, you know, I know there was a tour of all the lighthouses in that area in Mystic. There's like three or four over there. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the deal is you can go spend the day in at Ledge Lighthouse, not spend the day, but go visit it. The Penfield Reef story is a little more interesting to me because there actually is someone involved. There was the keeper of the light. This would happen in 1916. Sorry, a little more recent. 1916, the lighthouse keeper, whose name I'm not going to remember now, it was around Christmas time. He was rowing home for the night to kind of, you know, go back and join the family for Christmas. The boat capsized that he was rowing and he drowned. They didn't find his body for 3 months, but they did eventually find it. Hmm. And, you know, his fellow keepers claim that they, you know, after he passed away a couple of months later, that in the room or his bunk, they kept seeing this unusual kind of gray phosphorescent mist kind of hovering around the place. And since then there were doors closing, things opening, you know, going off by themselves, all sorts of weird noise, the foghorn going on by itself, all sorts of kind of cool, unusual stuff. And then there's also two stories of people, you know, one of a yacht that was in trouble that all of a sudden the guy in a rowboat just kind of appeared and saved the yacht and just kind of disappeared. And then also two young swimmers were kind of swimming. And all of a sudden a guy appeared that looked like, you know, the old lighthouse captain, save them, and of course when they turned around to thank him, he was gone. So but they believe that's the captain. He's still on duty trying to protect people around the Penfield Reef Lighthouse. I forgot his name. I apologize to whoever.
God, Ray.
Can we just go back to Steve, please?
Sam. I think it was Sam Bricknell.
There you go.
Steve, is that Google? Did you Google that?
No, I actually have no idea.
So, are you guys still adding sites to your site, Connecticut, in Connecticut?
Yeah, like, you mean locations? Adding more stories and stuff?
Yeah.
Go, yeah. I do. I have, like I said, I have a list of things. I've just been kind of caught up with writing about this, working on this other book for that I got, you know, that they're paying me for. Yeah. So sometimes that takes priority. So I've kind of been busy kind of doing that about the cemeteries. So when I finish that project, yeah, I'll definitely have a list of like at least a dozen other stories that I could be at that I plan on adding. I just haven't gotten to yet.
Yeah. And in the fall and winter too, seems to be when we get a lot of new content. I don't know if it's just Halloween and mm-hmm. there's less to do, but that's usually when you'll see more updates, new stories, everything.
Ray is stuck inside, so he has to write.
Do paranormal groups reach out to you guys personally to maybe get some stories or research behind locations that maybe they can't find out or ask you some more questions?
Yeah, we get a lot of emails. A lot of I don't think they – I'm not sure exactly, but they'll just ask for permission to go to these places from us, and it's a little confusing. But yeah, we do get some asking if they can use for their blogs and mm-hmm. If they can use our articles, and which is fine. And we haven't gotten Ray, you went out with one or two groups, right?
A couple of different groups, yeah, like probably three or four. I've been fortunate to kind of go out to a couple of different cool places and see some neat things. So yeah, people do reach out to us. Groups reach out, like you said, a lot of people ask for permission. I'm like, we don't own this place, you know.
Might have the contacts that they don't have, and they might ask.
That's true. And when I do, you know, like a lot of times one of the places people have asked me about repeatedly was the Sterling Opera House in Derby, which is really cool. And we got invited there by a gentleman named Rich DiCarlo. But yeah, I think it's the same person that invited the Ghost Hunters. Mm-hmm. They're trying to renovate the place. It's kind of it's a cool building. It was built like in 1898, somewhere around there. It was a vaudeville place. Like Houdini played there. Lionel Barrymore, John Philip Sousa. Apparently, the original screening of The Birth of a Nation was there. So some really cool things. And you know, over the years, you know, it was. An entertainment venue, then it became the city hall. There's actually a jail in the basement, which is kind of creepy.
Oh, that's weird. And,
yeah, we went in there, Dan, a while ago.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, we've been in there. They have, it was almost like a town hall down below the opera stage.
Yeah, it absolutely, yeah, it was. It was like the government offices for a while. So.
Yeah, that was an interesting place.
Did you make any contact with Andy? Right, that's the resident ghost. It's supposed to be a little boy named Andy that lives.
No, but we were getting like knocks, and there was a few investigators in there. So it was too. My thought process is, as an investigator, I was always, when in doubt, throw it out. So
yeah.
We would get knocks or we get voices, but we weren't sure. So not a whole lot. We were getting some hits on the K2, but nothing. It was just a nice place to go to, you know.
Oh, it's a gorgeous place. They've kind of renovated the outside of it, but the inside needs to completely be redone, and they're still working on it.
Boy, this
that's two, one of those ones like. Sorry about.
Oh, this is 3-4 years ago. I would assume that they're almost finished now.
I think they're a little cash strapped and it's going a little slow. Yeah. I'm wrong, but I've heard anything that they're actually doing. I mean, I go there on that street all the time because there's an Archie Moore's down the street, and then they have like the best wings.
Oh, geez.
So I've gone there with my kids.
Advertising.
Free wings for Ray.
Them and Hooters.
But no, I mean, it's actually, I like going there because it's only about 10 minutes from my house. So that's convenient for me. So that's why I go watch games sometimes with my friends and wings. So I see the Opera House quite a bit, and they always open it up at Halloween. They do lantern tours there around the Derby Green. One of the other books outside of Dam, Connecticut I wrote about the story of Lydia Sherman, who was known as the Derby Poisoner. She murdered three husbands and 8 children.
Oh, my God.
Six of her own. 6 children of her own and 2 stepchildren. Jeez. Poisoned them all.
Allegedly?
Oh, no, no. No, no. It's not even allegedly. She wrote her confession, which I have, which is a great little book if you have time. It was absolutely bonkers. But, yeah, she talked about, like,
kids are hard.
Really, she really, what'd you say?
Kids are hard.
Kids are hard. Well, that was basically it. Her first husband, she murdered. She was living in New York City. He was a police officer, and he lost his job because he was accused of being a coward. So he fell into depression, started drinking. So she decided, rather than see him suffer, that it would be easier to poison him.
How good of her.
After she poisoned him, of course, right? That's the way you always do it. After she poisoned him, like, she's like, holy crap, I have 8 children. This is really hard to live this way. So rather than, she literally says in the confession, rather than watch them suffer, she starts poisoning all them. And she poisoned 6 of them before, like, the oldest one was somehow, like, wasn't living with her. So he managed to get away on his own. And then there was one she swears she didn't poison, but dies anyway somehow, magically.
Oh, wow.
Now, where can we find this good read, Ray?
This is actually, if you want to read this story, the story of Lydia Sherman, the Derby Poisoner, you can, it's in my other book, which is called Speaking Ill of the Dead, Jerks in Connecticut History. You can get that on Amazon. It's in bookstores. It's all over the place. I won't ruin the whole story for you, but yeah, she murders a lot of people.
Wow.
The cool part of the story is she ends up in Derby. She lived in Shelton for a little while, which really close to where I lived, as it turns out, like pretty close to my neighborhood. And then she moved to Derby to kind of finish up. And then finally they catch up with her. And, you know, after she's murdered 3 husbands and all these children, someone finally is like, wow, a lot of people die around you. And they start exhuming the bodies. And, oh, my gosh, they all have arsenic in them.
Jesus, that's like a hamster in a cage mentality. Like, I remember when I was little, I had a hamster that had babies, and like, that's what they do. They kill the babies because they're like, I'm not
taking care of these kids.
Yeah, it's like I live in like 1 foot.
That was kind of her take on it. The middle part of the story, she marries this 80 something year old guy called, just, they always call him Old Herbert. And he had a ton of money. She was like in her 40s when she marries him. So she's like a black widow type thing. And then she's like, one day his hands were shaking when he was going to shave. So that was her excuse to murder him. She's like, oh, he's getting old. Might as well do it. She wanted to put him out of his misery. She says that in the confession.
Wow. So if you ever see, like, Guide to Being a Better Wife, don't read that one.
And then the same thing with the third husband. Same, she hates to see him suffer. So the best part, I think, of the story is they don't hang her when they eventually figure it out. She's in prison for a couple of years. And at some point, she escapes. Like, she literally, something happens, and she walks out the front door of the prison and disappears for 2 weeks. When they finally catch up with her, she has already hooked up with an older gentleman, once again, who was very wealthy, as his, you know, as his nurse.
Oh, my God.
You know, the same pattern, again, getting ready. He would have been number 4 if they hadn't caught her and brought her back to justice.
Oh, my God. Sounds like the only suffering is, like, saying, I do. Like, that was the bad part.
Well, I definitely want to get to when I first got interested in the paranormal, the word on the street was Dudley Town. So does that seem to be like the most popular hit on your website, or a question about the website, or the most interest?
Yeah, it's definitely, I would say, in the top 5. And only, I think, because it's so well known outside of Connecticut as well. So if we look at the analytics for that page, you'll see a lot of hits from all over the world looking into anything with Dudley Town.
So you guys can count the hits on each link?
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. And you can see a map like of where,
wow.
And it's a Google,
Google Analytics.
Yeah, and it's pretty easy to, once you install it, to get it to take a look and see what's happening.
Once you marry a web designer.
Yeah, well, that too. Yeah. Click here. But I like the Dudley Town story myself. I have a friend. His name is William, I guess he won't mind, William Cogswell Clark, who is one of the... you don't think I should have mentioned his name? That's okay.
We're still laughing.
I think it's his great grandfather has a.
That's you doubted him.
Yeah, a large part to play in the story of Dudley Town. He was a doctor there. I believe he was the doctor that is mentioned a lot in the stories. And he holds the same. He's William Cogswell Clark, the 4th, I believe. And this William Cogswell Clark, the 1st, is. the name in the story for Dudley Town. But he's spent his whole life, he has access to it. He's a member of the association there, or his family is anyhow. And he's
Dark Force.
Dark Force entry. And they're really adamant on keeping people out. He's never had an experience there. He's camped there. He has full access to everything there. He's never had anything happen. Matter of fact, he says when they were younger, they would dress up. One of them, when he was a kid, dressed up in sort of an old leather coat and just stood in a tree as, you know, these teenagers were going around looking for the ghost. But he's never seen anything, but he's scared quite a few, I guess, over the years.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So how did the story become what it's become today?
I think the story goes back. I mean, it's funny. One of the Dudley residents or descendants, the Reverend Gary P. Dudley, has written a pretty good and thorough debunking of the legends and the myths that were surrounded this. And it's an old, you know, it was an old settlement. It was in the Litchfield Hills where they used to make iron. Kind of said that it was in a rocky kind of dark place. So you really couldn't farm there. So as people started farming in other places and also making iron in other places, they eventually just left the town and left it behind. So there's a lot of like foundations, empty. I don't know if there's any empty buildings, but there's foundations. And I think it was back in the 70s, the Warrens went there, decided to do a special and proclaimed it the most haunted place on the planet. And, you know,
that was it.
There's the answer.
And that was it. Yeah. And that literally was it. I mean, they did some sort of TV special. I don't remember exactly, but or they were part of one and they proclaimed that it's the most haunted place, and away you go.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you so much, you guys, for coming on. So Ray and Steve of DamnedConnecticut.com. And of course, Steve's wife, Kate, being the web designer on that. And so we'll get some more awesome, great stories coming up in October.
Yes.
Yes. And I would say also in October, we'll definitely do like we do every October, where we go through and we put our giant list of Halloween events. And unlike other places, I don't copy and paste. I go through all the different sites that are out there and put this list together myself. Like just I look at every haunted places or haunted attractions that already exist. I go through like CT Visit sites, CT Now, all those sites, and compile them all myself. So our list is, you know, a pretty comprehensive list. So if you're looking for Halloween type fun, come check out the site in October. We'll have it all loaded up again for everybody.
Awesome. So again, damnconnecticut.com. And in the meantime, you guys are always posting the weird news. I see that every day or every couple of days, just weird news around the state and all that. So that's something to look at right now.
Yeah, we do that. We try to stay on top of that. We love the great story a couple days ago or about a week or two ago about the legs that were found in New Haven. That was kind of a creepy story. So
very creepy.
Guys, thanks a lot for joining us tonight.
Oh, thanks for having us on, letting us kind of ramble on.
Yeah, thank you. I appreciate that. Had a great time.
Steve, thanks. You have not moved from the beginning.
No, I'm very...
I'm looking at your picture. You are good.
I'm intense.
Yeah, you are intense.
I take this serious.
Thanks again, guys. Have a good night.
All right. Take it easy. Bye.
Thank you. Bye.
Thanks for listening to Dead Tribe Paranormal. After you're done, please listen to our other podcast, Rock Stories. In this series, we meet with music artists and bands that are out there keeping the scene alive. We capture and share their stories with you, the fans, and use their music as a soundtrack. Also look forward to new shows like Audibly Anonymous, the show where you, the listener, can anonymously share your deepest secrets. Please visit our website at echopodmedia.com and sign up for our email list on the homepage.